You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and tonight's Clear Spot is a special hour-long episode of I'm Ready for My Close-Up, looking at the 15-year history of one of the best science fiction characters you may never have heard of. Professor Bernice Summerfield, middle name allegedly Surprise, and known as Benny to her friends, started off as a Doctor Who companion in the novels published by Virgin after the cancellation of the original TV series in 1989, and then, having travelled with the Doctor for over 60 novels, got a series of her own in print and then as radio-style plays released on CD to specialist shops, the next one of which, The Wake, sounds like this.
We should talk about Jason. I should tell you about everything that Sorry. I just can't. Not yet. Give me time. Irving Braxiatel, on the other hand. First met Brax 1,000 years in the future. I guess that would have been about 15 years ago. Nice guy called Gilmarnock was showing me the Garden of Whispers.
Every single statue is visible from the summer house, all 47 of them. And it's also the best place to hear the whispers.
Mandrine, the Archolite goddess of plenty.
Actually, it's pronounced Mandrine. I'm sorry if I startled you. I, too, was admiring the view. Although I cannot stay long, I'm afraid I shall have to return to my researches soon.
It is quite a view.
This summer house was constructed by Dupoc. He worked from a holographic model. In fact, the whole site was modelled as a similarity before construction began.
An interesting technique, although rather expensive on such a scale, I would imagine.
I should imagine so.
Hardly original, though.
Oh?
Much of the design is, after all, based on the ancient Palace of Versailles. Richard Meek worked from three-dimensional models when he created the small buildings in the grounds there. He gave the models of the Temple of Love and the Belvedere to Marie Antoinette.
Touché!
In tonight's show, I'm looking at the 15-year history of Benny Summerfield, why she's such a well-loved character by aficionados, and remains popular, if somewhat neglected by the general public, to this day. I'm talking to the actress who plays Benny, Lisa Bowerman, plus Stephen Fuel, the actor who plays her husband Jason, and Simon Gurrier, the current producer of The Range. Later, Simon himself will be interviewing actress Sophie Aldred, who played Benny's predecessor Ace on TV and joined her for a couple of adventures on CD, and Gareth Roberts, a writer now known for his recent Doctor Who adventure The Shakespeare Code and episodes of The Sarah Jane Adventures, who wrote one of the early novels that featured Benny. Also, sci-fi critic and writer Graham Slight will be talking to author Paul Cornell about creating the character, and there's a look behind the scenes at a recent recording. First up, here's my interview with producer Simon Gurrier.
Today we're in the studio at the recording of August's Benny release. You're the producer. I mean, what kind of an overview do you have in that role? I mean, checking the scripts, the kind of direction, the emotional content of each one?
Yes. My job has been to commission scripts, edit scripts, get scripts out to actors, get the directors involved. I've tended to leave the actual casting to the directors themselves, but I do get approval of that, which is really just, yes, that sounds fine. And then I come in with the on the day and basically administer, so looking after checks, contracts, answering questions, a lot of the, you know, it's good for the director to have somebody to ask questions of, do the washing up, do the reading in of small lines, things like that, and then all the sort of just supervising the post-production, making sure that that's all going on, keeping the director and the sound engineers chatting to each other and making sure that that goes along, making sure people meet their deadlines, and then finally getting copies of product to the contributors.
That's
sort of where it ends.
So, I mean, because the reason I paused before asking producer, because I suppose your job covers a great many more roles than that of an ordinary producer, particularly these days when the word producer seems to become inextricably linked with showrunner because of American TV shows.
Technically, I'm the showrunner on Benny.
Yeah. The kind of people who buy the Benny CDs on a regular basis, I mean, do you find that you need to keep peppering the Doctor Who references back in because it's ultimately a Doctor Who spin-off, or it's got enough of an identity in itself that it's just kind of, it's nice in the nostalgic way but not necessarily a necessity?
Good question. Benny has to stand on her own.
Yeah.
But I think that's true of any of the spin-off ranges. Dalek Empire has to stand on its own. Gallifrey has to stand on its own. Mm.
But I suppose something like Dalek Empire, for example, the only thing that it's got is the Daleks. There don't seem to be many other kind of references. You can just enjoy it by itself.
Well, yes. Benny's got a lot of history herself. Mm. That's the thing. Benny's got a lot of history with the Doctor in the New Adventures, but she's, you know, she's been around for 15 years.
Yeah,
that's a sizable. We are talking. She's been around as long as Doctor Who was when the Remus operation.
The amount of time that she's been around without the Doctor is longer than she was with.
Oh, definitely, you know. Definitely. So there is a lot of backstory. So we are involved, especially this year because it's the 15th anniversary. I've tried to put something in that gives a bit of a sense of the history and stuff. So we've got everything from Caddy Astrid Lethbridge Stewart appears in the Final
cool.
Amendment. Roz and Chris appear briefly in cameo in the two Jasons for
good.
Various reasons.
Only in book form, then.
Yes. and Gary Russell makes an appearance in The Judas Gift. He plays the newsreader. So high and low, there's various bits and pieces. But yeah, it does need to stand on its own. The kind of thing that's tricky this year is how much you can listen to any of this year's plays on their own.
Mm.
But I have seen it as it's a six-part story. And I think that's the only... I've tried to make each story hang together so that you can listen to it on its own, but it is designed to be episodic. And there are cliffhangers and there are so on and so on. And I think it's more rewarding that way. That said, Benny has largely in the past been standalone stories, and it will be again next year. There will be, obviously, a kind of ongoing character thing, but the stories will be designed as a standalone.
Well, I mean, all sorts of kinds of sci-fi have done that before, gone from episodic to serialised and back again, so I mean...
Yes. And it's partly because my brief was specifically to tie up loose ends and to deal with the on-running stories and to come to some kind of satisfying conclusion, because things had, large and small, things had been left on one, you know, on one side and things.
And so, I mean, you know, I can say this as a sci-fi fan myself, that many TV series that have come and gone over the years that you expect to have a beginning, a middle and end just never did. And it's incredibly frustrating, so it's good that you're actually doing this, even though it's going to be keep going.
Yes. I mean, I was kind of frustrated as a listener before I even, you know, was writing for Big Finish or anything like that there were several things that were set up that were never really referred to again. And certainly after The Mirror Effect, which is an absolutely fantastic play, and there's all sorts of things and turns over everything you think is going on with Benny and Brax and characters and Jason and whatever. And then it's kind of never referred to again. And there are reasons why, and there's a get-out clause and whatever. Mm. And I wanted to say, no, let's confront this, let's actually deal with it and face it head on. And I hope, you know, I've certainly found it rewarding to do that. I think it's generated some really interesting stuff. But then I would say that because I was in charge.
Going back to my previous question, not that, you know, I hope that people ever stop buying your ranges, but do you find that people who do buy Benny are like diehard Benny fans, or they buy Doctor Who ones as well? I mean, not that you give out questionnaires or anything, but
I suspect that pretty much everybody who is getting Benny is getting Doctor Who in one form or another. I do know people who only get Benny, which I have one particular correspondent who thinks Benny is better than anything else that Big Finish does, which is very gratifying. I think he just wants a job, but yeah, we're a niche thing. We are smaller, we do sell less than Doctor Who. I think that's a standard thing. My job is to ensure that what we are doing is, from our point of view, is not a minority interest, that it is serious, it is rewarding, it is worth sticking with. And there are a lot of the things that I've been trying to do in the past is to make it more rewarding, is to pay that off, to make sure that people who've been sticking with it do actually get some payoff and things.
Do you find new fans coming to Benny after all this time?
Yes. Yes. I went to LA in February this year to the Gallifrey convention and was a bit bowled over by how enthusiastic people were just generally about everything, which was lovely. And I got my brother to come in and shoot a 5-minute behind the scenes documentary thing just so I had something to show people, because I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I wasn't sure how recognised Big Finish would be, how recognised Benny would be, and so on and so on and so on. And the response was absolutely extraordinary. Loads of people really asking questions, who'd been following it, who had things to ask, but also people asking where they should start. You know, they're going, oh, I'm aware there's a lot of stuff, and where could they get in and catch up and things. And that is still ongoing. So, yeah, that's been really good.
I mean, I suppose also it's what Big Finish started off doing, Benny adaptations, even for Doctor Who.
Yes, although there's an argument that people already knew of Benny before that, and she'd come through the books and things, so there was a following.
But you know, from that first CD, even though it was a novel adaptation, I wouldn't expect, you know, the company to say, oh, we'll just sell this to people who have read the books. From the start, you'd want people to buy a new range.
And you can see a very conscious, I mean, this is years before I've started, but you can see a very conscious effort to get Doctor Who fans involved. Every one of those first six stories has somebody from old Doctor Who in there. I think that's right.
Yeah, rings a bell.
Yeah, maybe Just Ward doesn't. But
although in retrospect, it had Maggie Sable, isn't it?
And Mark Gatiss and stuff. But you know, there was a definite attempt to involve people, and they also tried things where they were getting people to subscribe, and you got a subscriber offer and the Buried Treasures CD and things like that. So there are all sorts of efforts to get people involved. But also, it's funny. There's things like Survival coming out on DVD and Lisa being on the documentary and stuff. I found people.
Did she plug this range at all?
I'm sure she did. She's very good at that. I'm sure they just snipped it out. But people have investigated Big Finish through, or Benny through that. I think I'm already seeing people asking questions as a result of Happy Endings being adapted and things.
Right. Human nature.
Human nature. And because the novel, which features Benny originally, is available on the BBC website, I'm rather hoping that that will have an impact to people. It's got a fantastic series of notes by Paul Cornell, which is really insightful, very, very interesting, involved in the whole process of it and who everyone is. I think that's fantastic. And as well as that, you've got The Dying Days, which also features Benny as well. Two of the best new adventures.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's great. I you know, you couldn't really ask for more. The real problem is that the new series is you know, what it giveth, it taketh away, which is that it makes a lot of attention for Doctor Who, for other things, for spin-off series, for what's been going on between the, you know, the interregnum years or whatever you want to call them.
Well, at its most basic level, the TV version of Human Nature doesn't have Benny in it.
Yes. But also, there's a lot of other stuff. So Big Finish is, you know, Big Finish is competing not just with other books, with other audio plays, with other whatever. It's competing with the Dalek cake, it's competing with the Dalek mugs, it's competing, you know, there has got to be a limit somewhere to what the dedicated fan or you know, listener or whatever can actually buy each month. And that means, you know, that does mean that you have to think very seriously about how rewarding what you're doing is and stuff. And I hope Benny's always had a very particular you know, she was invented for new adventures, which were specifically aimed at a more adult audience and stuff. So we've immediately got a tradition of doing things that Doctor Who would never normally do, and standing out on our own, we can do things that the Doctor Who series wouldn't do, that the Big Finish's Doctor Who series can't do, and that gives us a certain amount of freedom and areas to play in and things of that sort. So hopefully we provide something that nobody else can, while still having a similar flavour and a tradition and a, you know, and a back history and so on. So that, you know, I think it's a really strong series.
The play you're recording today, The End of the World,
yes,
is written by Dave Stone.
That's right. Basically what Dave has done, which I'm really impressed with, is that he's delivered a novel and a play that interweave.
Mm.
And take Jason right back to the beginning, the first time we meet him, and the two Jasons retells his first meeting with Benny and some of it's as it is in Death and Diplomacy, and some of it's more embellished and some of it's different and so on, at the same time telling another story as well, and there's also bits that are repeated in the book and in the play and things like that. So there's a real kind of sense of finality but also closure to the character, which is, it's perfect, really. You know, we were recording earlier the final scenes and stuff, and I was getting goosebumps. It's terrible. You know, I've been reading this stuff, and I've been editing it and reworking it and arguing it left and right and back and forward and so on. And then you get into the studio, and it just lifts everything when it's played. So I hope it's all satisfying and effective and things, but you know, it's not really for me to judge.
It's something that seems to be quite popular in Japan, taking an ongoing narrative between different medium, like having an episode of a cartoon, a live-action movie, a computer game, and people accept that it's the same characters. But with Benny, you have a story that continues both in the books and in the audio plays. Do you have to be mindful that maybe some people are buying one and not the other?
Yes, it's very difficult to judge. I am aware that there are people who only get the CDs. I am aware that there are people who only get the books. There are also people who dip in and out of both.
Mm.
And will maybe get two CDs and a book a year or something, depending on how the reviews are and that, things of that sort. So you try, as I said before, you try and make everything intelligible and satisfying on its own, but more rewarding if you follow the whole thing. There were arguments about season 7 that it felt like people were, even if people got everything, they still weren't getting the whole story.
Because in the parallel universe, there's a TV show as well.
Yes. And I should have bought the T-shirt in which everything was explained. I think that's a very fair criticism.
With any kind of narrative that's set in a particular world, even if it's set in our world, something that's supposedly, like, you know, if you watch EastEnders, there must be a certain awareness of what's going on in the world around it, and you wouldn't expect everyone who watches an episode of EastEnders to read every daily newspaper from page to page or be aware of everything that's going on in culture, so there will be references that they miss.
Yes. My solution with season 7 was to suggest that some time had passed between each play.
Hmm.
I think that's what threw people, that there would be a cliffhanger or there would be a development and then the next play would start not immediately after but some time after, so that you would have to work out where you were at the beginning of each play. I kind of thought that was the best way to play it. I'm not sure that it necessarily was. I think we may have confused people a bit. I think we may have left people feeling, especially if you were only getting the CDs, that maybe you felt that you were missing something that had been in the books and, you know, that sort of thing. So we've tried it slightly differently this year, where the CDs run as a series, which hopefully run from play to play to play, and the books work around them,
okay,
so that they add texture to what's going on, and have their own stories to tell. Mm. But if you're just listening to the CDs, there's a much more coherent, this is a 6-part series, and the books are kind of a bonus. That said, I think if you get the whole lot, I think there's a lot to reward that. There's all sorts of stuff in the two Jasons which prefigures and sets up and plays off against things that happen in the audios and stuff. So
I'm talking to actress Lisa Bowerman, who plays Professor Bernie Summerfield. You've been doing this part for 9 years now?
Yes, I'm still completely amazed. As I've said to various people before, it feels like a couple of weeks, and then I look at the photographs in the first episode and I go, oh yes, it really has been 9 years. But it's remarkable, and I'm delighted. It's very rare that a part goes on for that long, and you would have thought that the interest levels would have dipped slightly, but extraordinarily it isn't, which I think is a testament to how popular the character is and what a great character she is.
I mean, it's been 9 years, but only, I think, about 40 CDs. But then I suppose that's kind of the British way, that we always do short runs of things, because in America, 40 episodes is 2 years' worth of something. But since it's been that amount of time, presumably there's still been as much development of the character as you might expect.
Absolutely. I think, to be honest, it's like the law of diminishing returns. If you put out too much product, and I'm going to be slightly controversial here, it's rather like soap operas going daily for 5 days a week. There's only a certain amount of storylines that are credible that you can actually get through in that amount of time. So the advantage with Benny is that it's ranged from 4 CDs a year to, in the last couple of years, it's been 6 CDs. That's mainly to do with tying up story arcs that have been going on for the last 18 months or so. But I think it's an advantage because it gives editors and producers the space to really give her development in the right way and not just for changes for change's sake. So yes, it suits my point of view fantastically.
If I was to describe the character to someone who didn't know the range at all, it's very hard to describe it without mentioning sort of fictional characters that have come after, say, a cross between, I don't know, Bridget Jones and Lara Croft.
Yeah.
But Benny predates them. It's a shame that she's such a strong female character that not that many people know about her.
It is quite extraordinary. I mean, it's been relatively well documented. When I first knew that I was going to be seen for this part, my friend Stephen Fuel, who actually ended up being in the series playing Jason Kane, who's her sort of erstwhile on-off husband. I obviously knew about various Doctor Who bits and bobs, but he said to me, I went to see him in a play, and he said to me afterwards, "Are you being seen for Bernice Summerfield?" And I said, "Oh, my God, I couldn't remember her name." He said, "She's an icon, you've got to play her." And of course he'd read all the novels, and to a very specific readership, certainly, and also within the Doctor Who world, she was this huge character that I had no idea about. And as you say, it is a pity in terms of the broader audience that she hasn't been quite as well known, because she is an extremely well-rounded character. I mean, when I first started it, obviously, excuse me, I had no back reference to her at all, other than the fact that, you know, people personify her as a hard-drinking, hard-living, you know, slightly wild character. But when I first read the first script, I have to be honest and hold my hand up and confess I hadn't read any of the books. And the first audition was a script called Oh No It Isn't, which is the very first one, which of course was an adaptation of one of the new adventure novels that Virgin used to publish. And I thought, she was really good because there was humour. She was very strong. There were no concessions to her being very girly. But at the same time, she wasn't too scary. She wasn't too much of a ball breaker. And I think that can be, especially when you're writing what is commonly known as strong women, there's always a tendency to go a little bit over the top. But she's got her humanity. She's got her humour. She drinks. She has a good time. But at the same time, she has a very firm moral code. She knows what's right and what's wrong and fights for it. And in terms of kind of adventurous, I think, you know, she's fantastic. You know, say predating all those really well-known characters. I think there is a wider audience out there. But I'm not biased at all, of course.
Well, I mean, it almost feels like the whole Tomb Raider thing has now gone off the ball. No one really sort of talks about Lara Croft anymore. Looking at possible other inspirations for Benny, I suppose Karen Allen's character in Raiders of the Lost Ark, who's meant to be coming back in the new film, is a good parallel.
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny that these sort of characters do crop up, certainly in film context, from time to time. There's Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's always somebody in things like Romancing the Stone and people striding around in khakis in jungles and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, this has got a sci-fi overtone. Yeah, yeah. I don't know quite whether she was a groundbreaker, but for this strong a female character to have been around for what is now 15 years, obviously in print she was around for as long as that. I think it's becoming, I hate the word relevant, but I think she is becoming more relevant because, you know, I think emancipation, we're past the point of having to go too far in order to come back. Should we say, it went too far, but we need to come back again. Oddly, she seems to be a lot more groundbreaking than a lot of the characters you see on television, who are still stuck in this, either you're a ball breaker in a suit or you are a council house mum with 15 kids. And finding a normal, interesting character that has no particular concessions to being a girly, it's really quite refreshing and fun to play. Over the years, she has developed so much as a character. Again, children change people's perspectives. You know, you're suddenly a responsible person, responsible for another individual. And in terms of Bernice's character, that is no different. You know, her moral perspective is still the same. But she's had to tone things down purely because she would have killed herself by the time she'd have got to this stage. I think in terms of how you look at it in a modern context, yes, I think there is. You know, there's a lot of arguments about binge drinking and irresponsible drinking. But at the same time, I don't think you can be too puritanical about things. If you get a bit pompous and self-righteous and stand yourself on a pedestal being the moral guardian, any drama that starts getting polemic like that can get incredibly boring. So she drinks when she wants to drink, but she just doesn't do it all the time, you know.
Well, and also, I mean, I've heard interviews with you before. You've said that it was nice, when you started playing the character, that she had this strong literary history beforehand. Because presumably, as an actress, when you take any role, there's only so much you can get out of the script. And, you know, if you've got a good director, maybe they can say, oh, this happened in the past and so-and-so. But at least with Benny, there's just so many avenues you can go down. You know?
I think that's another reason why the character has maintained the interest over so many years. When I first started, I did more asking than reading. Like most writers, I suppose, everybody has a slightly different take on her. Some have been more successful than others, because there's another stream that, of course, is very strong with her, is her humour. And the humour and the bantery one-liners she comes out with tend to be reserved for when she's in moments of great danger. And the temptation is, of course, to get too clever with that and, you know, overwrite that sort of humour. But when I asked about her to friends, first of all, they all said, oh, she's very humorous, she has this very pragmatic approach to things, and all the things we talked about earlier on. And when I first read that script, wild and wacky as it is, because it's set in the world of Panto, don't ask, just listen, I thought, what on earth is this? But the way, the syntax, the way that she used the language, the character, was so extraordinarily strong that there was kind of no two ways to play it. Like most actors, when you pick up a script, depending on the quality of the writing, it either flies off the page at you, or you have a great difficulty finding a hook onto, you know, to latch a character. And Benny was so well-rounded, I had absolutely no... There was no other way to play her, and it was wonderful. I just clocked into it immediately. You know, I'm very, very lucky. But that she's a strong character.
I mean, when you started playing Benny, obviously she'd appeared in 66 books or at that point, which suggested that she had an enduring appeal. But did you think that 9 years later?
Not at all. Actually, I was a bit naughty, because I went along to this interview for Bernice not thinking that it was... I'd never heard of the character. I knew it was sort of Doctor Who related. Big Finish had only just started. And, of course, you know, Jason, Gary and Nick, you know, very professional. But they were effectively, you know, guys who'd known each other since they were 13 and were all Doctor Who fans. So, you know, you have a certain perspective of what you're going to expect. So I turned up in Nick Briggs' front room with a microphone strapped to an uplighter, and I thought, oh, this is encouraging. You know, it's just a good old BBC, you know, radio drama. Okay. But I thought it was going to be a job that would last 2 weeks. And I turned up to the first recording, and it was all done post-production, which, again, I wasn't used to. And it was a really manky studio down in Elephant, in a basement in Elephant and Castle. It was shocking. And with a sort of flea-ridden cat, you know, strolling around. And I heard the first CD, and they've got a very good editor called Alistair Locke, who was one of their first editors. And this remarkably fantastic kind of layered sound came back at me, and I thought, oh my god, this is a dreadful thing to say, this is better than I expected. But I hadn't even told my agent about this job. You know, I thought, well, it'll last a couple of weeks, and it was great fun to do. And then, of course, they got very good responses when we first launched them. I mean, I was a bit alarmed when Gary said to me on the first day of recording, he said, now, we're going to launch you at this convention here, and then we're going to, you want to do an interview with that magazine here. And I'm thinking, oh, God, I haven't told my agent about this. He's going to hit the roof. But I thought, oh, it's all right. We won't see them. But then, of course, the BBC heard them latterly, and I knew the company had been looking, it's like the Holy Grail to these guys, looking for the license to do proper Doctor Who, the classic Doctor Who audios. And, of course, Benny Summerfield, because of the quality of the production and the production values and the writing, I think the BBC was suitably impressed and then gave them permission to do the license, at which point I thought, well, goodbye, Benny, you know, it's not going to happen. But I really have to thank Gary Russell for this, because he really fought for Bernie's to be kept on. And I mean, the listenership, it's always going to be, at that stage, it was always going to be a niche market. Yeah. But they were a very loyal niche market, and they hadn't really ever lost any money on it. It's always been a smallish market, but the quality is always kept up, and the listeners have been fantastically loyal. So I was kept on quietly in the background, and weirdly, we're still going after 9 years. I won't say weirdly, because actually, and also obviously they publish the books as well in tandem with the audios. But there's been some fantastically good writing on it, and I feel extremely fortunate to be in the position to be able to develop a character over that long a time. Extraordinary.